national talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
I don't believe that for a second,
you
mister.
You don't.
Who are you and what have you done with Michael?
I'm really Paul Strolley.
Yes, no. Paul Strolley does not have those cashmere vocal cords.
You think?
Man. No, I can't talk like that.
I think you sound sweet.
I sound like Nicolas Cage next to you. You talk and I'm just like, Peggy Sill. What is with you, Peggy Sill? I sound like Pokey. You're Gumby to my Pokey. Do you know
well,
that?
That's okay. And I say, you know.
Which is actually an adult film, isn't it?
It is. I just saw it last night. About 4 o'clock in the morning.
We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
Our thanks, Paul, also go out to performingartslive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region. And our guests today, Paul, by the way, include opera singers, musicians, right, songwriters, Broadway stars, puppeteers, dancers, actors, and considering that we only have two guests today, versatility is the theme of today's broadcast. Joining us in studio, award-winning leading tenor with the New York City Opera, a 1993 national winner of the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions, and according to Dramalog, a man with a glorious tenor voice. Dennis McNeil is here with us. Welcome, Dennis.
Dennis is here.
Thank you.
How are you?
It's good to be here.
Good to have you.
Thanks
good to have
having
you.
Me.
And holed up at an undisclosed location in Pennsylvania and desperately trying to enjoy her day off, she is currently appearing in a smash hit War Horse at the Vivian Beaumont Theater, which is nominated for 5 Tony Awards, including Best Play. The multi-talented and equally lovely Lena Rideout is on the line. Lena, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes,
hello.
She is. God, technology is amazing, isn't it? Good to have you, Lena. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
From the left coast, from the right coast.
From the right coast.
From the right coast.
Depending on how you look at it,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, exactly. But thank you for joining us. We'll be with you in just one second. First, I want to hear about Michael. Tell us about your week. What did you do this week?
Well, you know, busy week, the usual stuff with the nightclub and the few, you know, Paul, the very few hours that I spend being able to watch news and or television of any sort,
right?
You know, and then I pick and choose those things carefully. And unfortunately, I had to see yet another edition of Celebrity Apprentice.
You say unfortunately, like you're not addicted to the show.
I am addicted to it. That's the problem, you see. But I say unfortunate because it involved yet another meltdown by the Meatloaf.
By the Meatloaf?
By the Meatloaf.
The collective Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I put on my Facebook page sometime during the week that if I was going to be subjected to yet, you know, something else like that, a dysfunctional, demoralizing breakdown by this man, that I was going to call the Donald and have him ship Meatloaf overnight to the Biggest Loser, because I can't take it anymore with this guy. What is wrong with him?
I don't know. We the thing about the reality shows is that I don't think a lot of these celebrities realize that, you know, you can't fake it that long. You can fake an interview, you can fake a performance, you can fake that, but when the cameras run 24/7 and the cameras are being run by people that are only interested in showing the dark side of human nature, you ain't going to appear good. You ain't going to look good on television.
Yeah.
Not that Meatloaf.
Well,
you know.
I guess he just kind of contradicts himself with the whole I'm doing it for the kids, I'm doing it for the charity. And he did get fired last night, and I was delighted about that. And then Trump brings him back to help the two final contestants, Marlee Matlin and John Rich. And he immediately starts taking over. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
There well, speaking of children, I think I want to say that...
In the news.
I'm actually having an 8-year-old inject Botox into my face.
You?
Yes.
Oh my God,
I've decided I'm going to go that route.
You
read
that
the story about this 8-year-old girl? Her mother was injecting her. Lena, did you hear about this with the 8-year-old girl?
I did. I didn't realize she was 8. I thought she was younger, so I'm actually relieved.
You're happy that she's
at least 8.
Yes. No, but she's... Did you hear about it, Dennis?
Well, I'm just glad I'm not the only one that does that.
No.
Wow.
Oh.
I actually was in pageants years and years ago, but not when I was that young. You know, it was more like right in college.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a whole different world. You see some of these tantrum and tiara things, and it's like, you know, put a tiara on the zygote. You know, I mean, how young do these children have to be before they parade them around?
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird enough when you're 19, but I can't imagine.
Yeah,
but,
at 8.
You know.
Well, I have 3
8.
Girls, and you just can't start early enough with this kind of stuff.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I'm actually thinking of getting Botox, Michael. What do you think? Looking at me, what do you think you would fix?
Well, Paul, we have
I'm
a limited
your
time
shoulder.
Here. What about an hour?
Limited time. Thank you. He's here all week. Go ahead. Say that again, Michael.
We have a limited time. There's only an hour show, Paul.
Good night, everybody. That's Michael Sterling. He's here all week. All right, let's talk to our guests, shall we?
Yes, indeed, we should. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a quintuple threat actor, singer, dancer, musician, songwriter, and will share with us how she's now added puppeteering to her resume. Her Broadway credits include Cyrano de Bergerac with Kevin Kline, Company with Raul Esparza, and Cabaret with Alan Cumming. Please welcome the lovely Lena Rideout.
Hey, only the finest here, you know? Michael is so sick of these sound bites, I can't even tell you. He just rolls his eyes. We only have 5 of them, and he rolls his eyes every time he hears them.
I think I should just, like, there should be an app for sound bites, because you're carrying around your phone, and, like, when you're walking to a room, you could just play it.
Oh, that's true, because you could
right?
have your own accompaniment everywhere you go.
Now, that's
I mean,
an
why
idea.
Not? Sound
that's
the soundtrack of your
idea.
Whole life.
That's a million-dollar idea.
It is.
Stay on the line. I want to talk to you about that. Well, we'll talk about it afterwards.
I'll be right back.
Let me jot that down. So, Lena, I was looking through the promotional material on Warhorse, and I said, why am I going to describe it when I can have someone who is in the cast of this 35-member cast share her own synopsis of what it's about and what audiences can expect when they go? Because so for our audiences or our audience members that are not familiar with it, can you give us a little breakdown of what Warhorse is about?
Yes. It's been a pretty huge hit in London for at least 5 years, possibly more, actually. And I've even heard from people, they go to London and still can't get a ticket.
Oh, wow.
That is not the only reason why I wanted to be involved in it. Actually, I remember seeing a clip of it online about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago and was like immediately almost in tears because it was so beautiful. And I thought, what the heck is this? I've never seen anything like this. I'm not quite sure where to start, actually. But
no, but feeling that way that you did about it, was that, I mean, did you just get the audition for it naturally, or did you really light a fire under your agents that says, if this thing comes to town, there, you know, you got to get me an appointment? Was it, well, how did that
I like
work?
That. I like that getting an audition naturally, as if somehow.
Is there such a thing? I don't know.
No, okay, the story is I remember seeing that and thinking, oh, well, surely that's nothing that I could be involved in. But then a friend of mine who was in South Pacific at the time, this is a little more than a year ago, said, there is an open call for this show and they need, like, this songster person who sings and plays the violin. And that's you, so you should go to this open call. And then I saw that they also needed somebody who spoke French and somebody who could do British dialects, and both I've had experience with. Not that I'm fluent in French, but I thought, somehow this has got to work out for me. So I went to the open call, and I played violin and sang and didn't get around to sides, but then I got a call from my agent, not even knowing if it was related to having gone to the open call, to do a puppetry workshop.
Oh.
And I thought, what from my resume makes you think I could do puppetry? But other than, I guess I do sort of odd theater that is more experimental and,
right.
you know, So I went, and apparently, I mean, I felt sort of like, oh, I kind of get this. It feels like a combination of dance, acting, and being a musician in a very tight ensemble.
Yeah, and yeah. You're saying that you're of the 15, there's a number of puppeteers, but there's only two female puppeteers in the production.
That is correct.
Right? Yeah. And
there's only two of us, yeah, out of 15. And
I would imagine fairly close quarters when three people are operating one puppet.
Yes. And luckily, I like my team so much. I mean, can you imagine? It's sort of like...
Yeah.
I've compared being working the Joey puppets. I actually do the baby horse, which is the first puppet, or even almost the first person you see. the three of us we trade off, and sometimes I'm the head of the puppet, sometimes I'm the front legs, which we call the heart, and the heart also is responsible for leading the breath, which is very important for puppeteering,
right.
And then the other position, of course, is the hind legs and the tail. So we actually switch every night, and that is saving us from repetitive injuries. As you
oh
can
yeah,
imagine.
I would imagine.
And it
very
also
smart.
Is fascinating. Yeah, and it's fascinating because the horse is never the same. You know, every night.
There's
it's
a person. Yeah, the subtle personality difference depending on who's performing.
Totally.
Like your role would be.
Well,
which makes it very exciting for the other actors.
Oh, I'd imagine so.
I would suppose. I would suspect that many people don't know the actual story of Warhorse,
right.
Which is about an English boy whose horse is sold to the cavalry and then shipped to France during World War I.
Yes, this was written. It was a book written by Michael Moore Pergo, I believe, in the 80s. And it's geared, it's sort of written for young adult audience,
mm-hmm.
And reads a little bit like, I don't know, I compare it a little bit to Lassie Come Home or Black Beauty, and it's just beautifully written and wonderful. And he had, I think it was inspired by reading about World War I and how many horses were killed
mm-hmm.
during that,
wow.
And sort of wanting to build a story around it. So, and actually the story... is told from the horse's point of view, as if the horse you can read the horse's mind.
Wow.
And when you see the play, the horse, of course, does not talk.
Right.
But nor do we play that the horse can understand any of these languages. But because it's a puppet, you sort of, I don't know, I remember even just watching rehearsals and was so much more fascinated watching the acting with a puppet than when the puppet wasn't there. There's
right.
Something about you wanting to put yourself... It's hard to describe.
Well, how does it work before you have the puppet to work with, Lainey? Before the... I mean, because you obviously didn't have that for rehearsals. How did they start it off?
No, we did, yeah.
Oh, you had the puppet the whole time?
We did, but they did not start us the first day. No, I mean, they wanted us to sort of... You know, I think there are three of us who had ever done puppetry before.
Okay.
And the rest of us, you know, they wanted to sort of start at the beginning. And they actually brought in a sack full of sticks, like literally sticks that were just that you'd find pull off a tree.
Right, right, right.
Small sticks. I would say that each one of them are like, I don't know, 7 inches long. And we were like, what are we going to do with that? Oh, every day was always like a different thing in our puppetry workshop, you know, once the rehearsal started.
Right.
And they said, okay, everyone pick your stick, and, you know, before we even knew what to do with it. And each one of them was different. And we had to decide how that stick was going to breathe. The first thing that a puppet has to do, that an actor doesn't have to worry about, is to live. And so that, it brings such an interesting dynamic into a play or a piece of theater.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, that's just a stick, but then you're like, no, it's breathing.
Yeah, you got to put life in it, yeah.
Yeah, what, yeah, and so the first thing is, how does it breathe, and then how does it move, and then does it make a sound? Is there a sound that it makes? And all of this is completely organic and no rules to it, especially when it's a stick, you know what I mean?
Right.
Now, when we move up the ranks, we made puppets out of paper and we did a bunch of other things. And then once you get this horse, of course, there are a lot of rules. And we did a lot of studying horse behavior. We went to stables. And my benefit on that was that I was one of those nerdy horse girls who absolutely loved, was obsessed with horses. But I was allergic to them and could not afford them. So
a horse puppet is perfect for you.
Oh, my God. I mean, I didn't really even put two and two together until about the second week of rehearsal, and they started talking about, now we have to make, you know, horse noises. And I thought, I used to spend hours trying to perfect horse noises when I was about 9. I mean, I was that much of a nerd, and I thought, this is the show I was supposed to be in.
It's all the horse fun without the dander. That's what it is.
They should put that underneath.
That should be the tagline.
The
all the horse fun without the dander. Okay, before we forget, speaking of that, the A War Horse is at Lincoln Center Theater. That's at the Vivian Beaumont Theater.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
150 West 65th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam and New York, New York. And for tickets, they're at Telecharge. Easy way to find it. But wanted to make sure that got out there. But want to talk to Lena about Lena for a moment or two before she has
to
go.
Sure, but before you do that, even, I wanted to also correct you on the Tony Award number. Actually, we got 6. We already won one for special puppetry.
Oh, right. Wow. So yes. 6 nominations.
Yes. Because, of course, this is how we were before the nominations comes out. We're like, well, what about Tony? I mean, what about Joey? Joey is the main character. Shouldn't we be up for Tony? And of course, we're a puppeteer, so
exactly.
That's not going to happen. But we did get a special. I mean, not us. It's more for Handspring Puppet Company, who were the ones who designed and made these puppets that are from South Africa, and we love them.
And they are stunning. If you can see the clips online, don't watch too much because you don't want to ruin your experience for the show.
Right.
But if you can see the clips online of some of the work, it's just incredible.
Lena, do you know John Tartaglia?
Not personally, but I loved him in Avenue Q.
Yes. He was a guest with us here recently
and
told us about his experiences, too, of working in Avenue Q on Broadway with the puppet. And he did win a Tony Award, actually, didn't he?
That's right.
No. He won. He was nominated. He did not.
He was nominated, but you know, he got to sing and talk. Like, that counts as also. Yeah. You know
right.
what I mean?
But oddly enough, he's allergic to felt, so it was very difficult for him. Lena, before I forget, put your website out there in the world. It's just Lena.com, right?
That's it. I got in on the whole register.com pretty early.
Okay, so it's Leenya. And are the links to, because I know you have the couple of albums out, but are there links to the Chalks there too? Because I think the Chalks are very, just such a wonderfully fun idea. As a matter of fact, if we have a second, I'm going to play a little section of this. So wait with me for a second.
Sure. Yeah, the Chalks.com is also the website you can go to, and they have, I mean, that's what the link would bring you to. So.
Okay. Before I play this tiny little sound bite, Lena, can you give us the 25 words or less description of the Chalks?
Ooh, I don't know if I can count, but okay. So the Chalks are a country western trio of superstar sisters, but it's comedy. I kind of tell people it's the Dixie Chicks or the Judds meet Spinal Tap.
Okay, I think
we sing and play and have original country songs, but it's all very tongue in cheek.
Yes, no, I've seen it and it's hysterical. Let's play a little soundbite. Hang on one second.
Oh, you rolled on your loose change, and you sold your wedding band. To the right place, we know how to get it done. Fire it up, shoot it off, burn it down, crank it up,
so damn funny. I've seen the Chalks, and it's just so damn funny. It's like it is. It's sort of like, you know, if Ashley joined the Judds and played the violin, and then you like turned it up to 11, as they say, turn it up to 11.
Exactly.
You would have.
We'd say like up to 11.
Up to 11.
Instead of, you know.
And there's a little. You got a project in the works with the Chalks coming up too, right? You're working on something because I know you've performed. I followed the Chalks' example because I performed at Bay Street. And I know you guys have done the show there.
Oh, you have, yes. Wonderful.
And then at the Laurie Beachman, too, which is a wonderful little club at the East Bank or West Bank Cafe?
The West Bank Theater, West Bank Cafe.
Yes.
So it's below that really nice restaurant that's on 42nd and 9th.
Yes, yeah. I've seeked a tad of solace in the grape at that particular restaurant. I have.
I think that I have a few times as
well. So what is the chalks thing that you're working on right now?
Well, we did a workshop and a performance actually out at Bay Street last summer because we have been really wanting to write a script, which is sort of unlike us. We've been fairly improvisational and loose with our material. We'll play songs that we've written, but we string them together with different things every time we perform and kind of tailor them often to events that we're performing at.
Gotcha.
You know? So this, we really want it, the chalks would be perfect off-Broadway.
No, it would. It's just, you could tell that already.
Yeah, and then it's always like, we always try to keep about a 15-minute section for current events that would sort of remain flexible.
Right. So you can keep it topical, yeah. Yeah.
So, we are going to be performing three nights at the Laurie Beachman in August. I believe it's the first Monday in August, and then the third Monday, and then the fifth Monday in August.
Okay, cool. So all those dates will be at thechalks.com, yes?
Yes. Yes,
and the
definitely.
Website for Leenya is leenya.com, L-E-E-N-Y-A. And please give a listen to, we're not going to get to the other track that we have, but please give a listen to the original work there because she has a couple of albums out and they're just absolutely wonderful. Leenya, thank you so much for joining us today.
And you know, Leenya, we only touched upon so many things, wonderful things that you've done in your career, such as My Fair Lady, of course, playing Eliza Doolittle, and My Favorite Broadway, and Nashville Star. You also did Nashville Star.
Yeah.
I love that show.
I know you're leading on to another special guest.
Mm-hmm.
I actually studied opera in college. That was my major, even though that's not what I do now.
Yeah.
but
your brother, too.
My brother is an opera singer.
Yes, Vale Rideout.
Yes, he just was singing actually the tenor solo at Carnegie Hall in Stephen Stuckey's August 4th, 1964, which is a new work. So he was just there on Wednesday.
I was on a beach.
He's a tenor as well.
I was on a beach in Hell's Canyon off the Snake River with your brother.
Yes.
Oh, really?
True story.
Really? When was that? You know Vale?
I know Vale.
What?
I know Vale.
Really?
Yeah, we've sung together. We've traveled.
Because
together.
The way you said that, it sounded like you were moving a body. Up. Yeah, it sounded like I was in a snake canyon and we were trying to dispose of the evidence. I didn't know what was happening.
All right.
It couldn't be more random. It couldn't be more random than that.
But that's unbelievable.
My optional statement was going to be that my sister's a puppet, but I decided to
tell
the truth.
Oh, what a coincidence. What a coincidence.
Wow.
And you did not know that.
Vale's a good guy. Great, great voice.
He is a great guy.
Yeah, he's really wonderful.
I saw Vale sing karaoke once. To a bar full of people who did not know he was an opera singer, and they looked like they had been hit with a board.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went up there, and he was very, wasn't being a showman or anything. He just picked up the mic, and he did that song, When the Lights Go Down in the City.
Oh, that's right, Journey.
Yeah. And just blew the rafters off the place. So the people
awesome.
Who were working the machine were just like, we're playing the wrong track. We're playing the track that has the vocal attached already. It was very, very funny. So anyway, Leenya, thank you so much. Much.
Yes, indeed. And
yes,
continued success in an amazing career that you have.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. And I love your show.
And thank you. And continued success with Warhorse. I'm trying to get tickets when I'm there at the end of June. So I'd love to
I would love it. Yeah, let me know.
Okay. Bye, Leenya.
Okay, you guys.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Happy Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love, Leenya.
Absolutely. Wasn't she
great?
She's quite easy on the eyes here, too.
She is. She's a cutie.
Yes, she is.
She's a cutie. Yeah.
She is.
She is.
Well, Paul, we have an arts calendar I think we need to address.
Yes, we do. Shall I kick it off?
Please.
I will. Seaglass Theater, one of LA's most critically acclaimed theater companies, dear to my heart, will hold its annual fundraiser this Saturday, May 21st, at 11 o'clock at Valley Park in Burbank. This year's event, Remember to Play, is a picnic that is family-friendly but not family-limited. Lots of food, fun, games, professional portrait photos, some amazing raffle prizes. You can see the whole list at the website. Past Sea Glass productions, How Sissy Grew, Wonder the World, and Of Grapes and Nuts were all smash hits with critics and audiences alike. So here's your chance to support one of LA's most ambitious and hardworking theater companies as they prepare for their fall production of Stephen Burkoff's brilliant dark comedy, Kvetch. Visit SeaGlassTheater.org for all the details, and please note that tickets, raffle prizes, and photo sessions should all be purchased beforehand, actually as soon as possible, through SeaGlassTheater.org, as cash transactions will be limited the day of the event. Once again, SeaGlassTheater.org, and that's theater with the affected R-E spelling, Michael.
There you go. And for more information, ladies and gentlemen, about events in our arts calendar, you can visit either stateofthearts.la.com or performingartslive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week.
Yes, and before we chat with Dennis, because I think he's going to tell him how he and another opera singer killed a drifter, is the next thing we're going to talk about. Michael was an active theater goer this week, and you saw a couple of shows, Michael, didn't you?
I did.
You said Gypsy.
We saw the West Coast Ensemble production of Gypsy.
And Jason Graw.
And Jason Graw in concert, yes.
Okay.
And so we'll start briefly with Gypsy, and you know, one of the great American musicals, right, in musical theater of all time. And
definitely
a very, very grounded and well-founded ensemble company, West Coast Ensemble, that always does great works.
You've talked about them before.
I have. And, and Richard Israel, who we had recently, Paul, in studio, is their artistic
director. Oh, yes. He was very nice.
And they tackle these big projects, and they're all meant for 99-seat theater stages. So it's a big challenge, and it takes a very, you know, particular kind of mind, I guess, to be able to put these on and put them on in a way that makes it seem like they are natural,
right,
to that size theater. And that's something that Richard does very, very well. And he staged this beautifully. It was directed beautifully with some very, very powerful performances, I might add. And to, you know, hearing the music of Gypsy again, and just the book, for me, was like hearing it for the first time. This is a musical that just doesn't age. You know, it's a story that stays unto itself through the ages. Yeah. And I was, you know, so happy to be in the audience on opening night and watching this lovely show unfold with, as I said, wonderful, wonderful performances, and hearing this wonderful music again. And the cast Richard has put together for this is quite stellar. It's a Stephen Sondheim show, as you know, and
right,
Arthur
mm-hmm.
Lawrence, and with Richard directing, and musical director is Joanna Kent. I must hand a nod to her for conducting a difficult score in that space, but it was done. And the various people that are in the play, and in particular some of the standout performances, were by the young lady who played Louise in the show, and I am going to talk about her in a moment, and also Mama Rose, Jan Sheldrick. Do you know Jan?
I do not.
Wow, what an actress this girl is, and she turned in just a stellar performance. Very, you know, the tougher than nails kind of mom. You know,
yeah. That's iconic role, yeah.
That she has to be, and saying it it was a very realistic portrayal of that character.
Grittier than usual?
Absolutely, yeah. And everything was... This, by the way, as you remember when Richard was here, it's called Gypsy Stripped in this particular version. So it's very stripped,
pared down.
Very,
right,
very much so in the presentation of this. And the woman who played Louise, as an adult, Rose Louise, Stephanie Wall, and she was fantastic.
Really?
Just fantastic. Really had it nailed down to the T and pulled off a beautiful performance, and very exciting to watch her work. And the three strippers involved, among them Sarah Stuckey, who played Tessie Tura, and the other two gals, they were just, you know, Jesse Schatz, I think, is the other girl's name, Electra, she played, if you know these names of these strippers, they were fantastic. So I urge everyone...
Oh, I know the names of a lot of strippers.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, Paul.
I have to be more specific.
Everyone should make a point of going out to see Gypsy. If you've never seen it before, you're in for a treat. Again, West Coast Ensemble at the Stage Arena Theater, which is directly next door to the Egyptian Theater mm-hmm. in Hollywood. And for more information, you should simply go to the West Coast Ensemble website, which is a .org website, westcoastensemble.org. And
okay,
you'll be able to pick up tickets there or find out information on how to do so.
All right, cool. And Jason Graw we had on the show, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Jason is a good friend, and he's headlined for me at Sterling's in the past. And actually,
and what's this Sterling's place?
Well, it's a place that Dennis is about ready to headline for us, and it's called Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's in Studio City. Thanks for asking, Paul.
Yes, yes.
And we are...
beautiful, Tahunga Village.
Yes, indeed. One of the top clubs in Los Angeles, presenting the best of people like... Jason, and like Dennis, and for the music of Broadway, the Great American Songbook. And Jason is one of these rare Broadway stars that can take his amazing little talent, I shouldn't say little, he's a little in size, but a big talent, and put it in any environment, be it my club or at the Colony Theater, where he opened on Saturday night, and he played just one night with the show there. Specifically because it was being recorded as a live album.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the
now, how big is that venue,
that
Michael?
That seats probably, I would guess, to say between 300 and 400
people. Oh, okay. So yeah. Nice enough to retain the intimacy, but...
Exactly. Yeah. A beautiful stage, big stage, you know, sold out, and very electric with the energy and seeing him do a show that he titled Perfect Harmony, The Songs of Jerry Herman. Jerry is a very good friend of Jason's, and this is the 80th birthday year of Jerry Herman. So it was a salute to his music.
Was Jerry in attendance?
No, unfortunately he was not. Oh. But he's aware of the show being done, and Jason and he are very, very good friends.
Oh, that's great.
And it is a true testament to this man. But it's not just like someone getting on stage and singing the music of Jerry Herman. It's what he does with this music,
right.
And his approach to it and his patter. And his sensibility as a comedic actor and the one-liners that he comes out with. It's just a precious evening. You know, for me, it takes a lot for me to laugh out loud.
Oh, boy, don't I know that.
I'm serious. You know, but I can enjoy something and internalize it.
Yeah.
I was laughing out loud.
No, and the thing is, though, you will fully enjoy something, not laugh out loud,
right.
And then you'll say, that was hysterical.
Yes.
But
exactly.
It really, for you exactly. To belly laugh and guffaw, really.
And yeah. At the same time, to get emotional is probably a little bit easier for me, and I certainly did in this show, too, because he did some renditions of some of Jerry's work that were just stunning. So, unfortunately, it was only a one-night event, ladies and gentlemen, but if you ever have the opportunity to see Jason Graw in concert, go to his website, jasongraw.com, and you'll find out where he's playing. Also, the Colony Theater is one of our great theaters here in Los Angeles. Visit them and their upcoming season by going to colonytheater.org. Colonytheater.org.
Thank you, Michael.
Yes, sir.
You are able to attend more shows than I these days because I'm rehearsing a show, so I have no time. But thank you for being out there and having your ear to the ground.
Yeah.
Our next guest is equally happy on the Broadway stage, the opera stage, in front of a symphony as a soloist or singing Irish folk music. He has performed with most of the major opera companies in the U.S., including the Met, New York City Opera, San Francisco Opera, New Orleans Opera, Los Angeles Opera. It's a shame he couldn't have gotten any of the big ones. And has held command performances at Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, and for 5 U.S. presidents. Please welcome Dennis McNeil.
Thank you.
How are you?
You are welcome.
Great. We have them
nice
well trained, don't we? With that applause.
You know, where do they come from? It's like they're in and they're out.
I know.
They're very
like
little.
So fast,
they're very
you don't
little.
Even see
they're,
them.
They're right under the couch in the lobby.
And they're so well trained, they stop applauding at exactly the same time.
Yeah, without even an echo. That's
exactly.
Sucks the applause right
exactly.
out of the room.
Echoless.
I've had
is that
shows
what you
like
said?
That.
What? Did you say we are echoless?
No. He said echo. I just said exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Although echoless is good. That's like lingo for echoless.
Yeah.
Oh, we're
go.
Echoless.
Echoless.
Yes. That's a play about a singing horse, isn't it? Echoless?
Something like that. Yeah.
Oh, that was a bad one. Anyway.
Tacky.
Yes. So, Dennis, I'm very curious about this because when reading the promotional material, one of the great things about this show is educating ourselves about different people. For me, Michael is more familiar, obviously, with you than I. But, about the inauguration, which of the presidents, you sang at one of the inaugurations, or who was the president that you...
Jefferson.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
When, and it must have been really...
shorter than you would have imagined.
You know, I've heard
George Jefferson.
I've heard that. And
George Jefferson, I like that.
That was his campaign slogan, we're moving on up.
That's right,
campaign
exactly.
Slogan. Yes.
Exactly. No, it was for George W. Bush.
Sure, for George
Bush.
W.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, his first inauguration.
And what was that experience like?
It was thrilling. It was exciting. It was kind of mind-boggling. I brought my friend Terry Bibb, who's a fabulous Broadway soprano.
Boy, is she ever.
Yeah, more than 1,000 performances of Christine and Phantom of the Opera on Broadway and National Comedy. Anyway, the two of us put together, and we entertained at three candlelight dinners in Washington, D.C., the night before the inauguration. So we either followed or preceded the president and the vice president with these audiences. And the first stop, we were, and each audience was about 2,500 people having dinner. Candlelight dinner, you kind of see a little different picture than 2,500 people in a room. And, big screen monitors and all that kind of stuff. And the first stop, we were introduced by Bo Derek and Wayne Newton.
Wow, what a pairing.
I had a dream like that once.
I thought this was a dream. I kept saying, somebody wake me up.
Bo Derek and Wayne Newton. Who had the Pepsodent concession on that group? I mean, that's just teeth for days.
Well, you want to talk about Botox. There's an 8-year-old with a job
exactly.
there.
Yeah, exactly. Bo Derek talks. Exactly.
8-year-old that was robbed.
Now, Bo looked fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
Yeah.
But she still does. Doesn't
yeah.
she?
I mean, and I got to say, I met Wayne Newton when I was doing the Jenny Jones show because Jenny used to do warm up for Wayne Newton. I used to do the warm up for the Jenny Jones show. A nicer guy you're not going to meet.
That's
Wayne
right.
was very, very nice.
Both of them. Very nice. Very friendly. And then we went on to each other's stop, the same kind of thing. But and who was in the audience was just as amazing. Yeah. And we never, we had an escort, and these three events were in completely different locations across town. So we were at the Hilton, then we were at the National Building Museum, and then we finished at Union Station.
All in one evening.
All in one night.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was, we felt like the president.
Yeah,
I think that sounds very cool.
Oh, yeah. You can't even whisk from one location to another to just perform and then run
off? You just get there, walk on stage, do your number, and...
Yeah, we'd walk on, do our thing, back off, get in the cars, and
were there rotating entertainments? Like, were there different?
No, really? It was. There were just different events, different things going on, different things being introduced at each one. For the most part, it was a social gathering. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, and I was suspecting, being that it was for the president, that everything was timed to. Everything was perfectly on time.
No, that's
right?
exactly right.
Oh,
if you
yeah.
look at the programs
precision,
of the three different evenings and you see the layout of the program, it's all the same stuff kind of in different orders, depending on who's going to be where when.
I did something like that, but oddly enough, I was hired as the escort.
Oh,
so that was a little different. So
you were the driver?
I was the escort, actually.
This
was a darker period in my career.
Yes, it was.
You know,
it was,
but, you do what you have
part
to.
Part of the scandal.
Three times a night. Exactly.
I didn't know you could hold up that long.
Yeah, well, there's pharmaceuticals for that now, Michael.
Yes, there are.
Dennis, tell us about because you were, I don't think it would be inaccurate to say that you're probably more associated with opera than you are with Broadway. Is that true to say, or would you?
Yeah, I've never actually performed on Broadway. I performed
just everywhere else
on Ninth Avenue, actually.
Right.
I was at Kennedy Center, at Lincoln Center when I was in New York, both at State Theater and at the Met. So it's kind of fun that talk about.
Not only do you have the other theater, Nowhere Sibling, but you perform the same place.
Yeah.
But the show that you have coming up at Sterling's, what is the? How did you sort of arrive at the content for that?
With an opera background, although I stopped singing opera 15 years ago, and I haven't stopped singing for a living. That's all I've ever done. I've done a lot of Broadway musicals, just not on Broadway, a lot of regional stuff. And I've also, because of, the show's called Me and My Big Mouth. Well, Me and My Big Mouth have gotten me into a lot of interesting situations, whether it's the Oval Office, or sitting with Ronald Reagan telling funny jokes or giving a concert with somebody like Condoleezza Rice at the piano. So I feel like Me and My Big Mouth, we kind of paired up. So that's kind of the title of the show. And so the show kind of represents a little bit of my life, a little bit of my professional life, in that I'm going to do stuff by Sammy Kahn, who I toured with for 6 months. at places like Ford's Theater and Caesars in Atlantic City. Hal David, who wrote all the great music with Burt Bacharach.
Sure, sure.
And then I've done a lot of work with a great musician, conductor, arranger, orchestrator, and composer, Lalo Schifrin.
Right.
So I'm going to do one number that is one of his arrangements. And so it's a kind of a culmination of 15 years of always wanting to do this kind of show in this kind of venue. And I've done it for a lot of private groups, a lot of private audiences, but I've never actually done a cabaret show for a cabaret audience. So this is, you guys are giving me my big break, and I'm very excited about it.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. Let's hear a little bit of Dennis. Can we?
Yes, we sure can. We sure can. But I do want to point out before we play this that Me and My Big Mouth, oddly enough, also the name of the escort service that hired me.
Oh,
when I did the
thing.
So
that's beautiful.
Oh,
this
a whole another show.
Yes, a whole other show.
Where's that sound effect? Do you need it?
Yeah, just I can't. I
you
can't.
Wouldn't want to hear
if,
that.
If
one.
If I had to play. Oh yes, we do have one for that one actually. this track is Maria, I believe, and let's not give it any preamble. Let's just listen in.
The most beautiful sound I ever heard. Maria, 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 Maria. All the beautiful sounds of the world in a single word. Maria, 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 Maria. I just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name the same to me. Maria, I just kissed a girl named Maria, and suddenly I found a wonderful...
You know, if only he had pipes.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a shame, but we try to support the fledgling singer here, and it's stunning, Dennis.
Oh,
it's
thank
really
you.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Thank
absolutely.
You really,
the
really
tonality
beautiful.
And
once again, what you said, Michael, earlier is perfectly echoed there. It's like, it's the singer, not the song. We know Maria is a beautiful song. We know that, you know, well, the one that you mentioned from Gypsy. It's not about that, because if it were about that, people would stay home with the CD. You know, it's about the interpretation of it, and that is just really beautiful.
Well, and also something about the performer, and I watched some clips on you this morning, actually.
Oh, I have a cyber stalker. How scary.
I saw those clips, too, and I really don't think we should talk about them right now.
Are we back to that escort service?
No, yes. It begs the following question. I saw Dennis in various situations, from the opera stage to a concert stage. Where are you most comfortable, singing opera or singing the music of Broadway or Great American Standards?
Pretty much wherever I am singing is where I'm most comfortable. But I've kind of moved away from opera because I wanted to have a real life.
Right.
And when you're a real opera singer and really having a career, you're out having a career somewhere that's not home. And I wanted to have the 1.5 dogs and 3/4 of a cat and a lawn and, you know.
That's your next album, isn't it?
Exactly.
1.5 dogs
exactly.
and 3/4.
So you're comfortable on these other stages for that reason.
Well, you know what? The opera stage, it just requires this commitment that's kind of like being an Olympic athlete all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not just for warming up for, you know, the Olympics. It's every 3 months you're in a new Olympics.
Right.
And so I'd actually much rather be doing, if I was going to commit time, I'd rather be on Broadway. And that's kind of a new, you know,
because you're at
dream.
You're at least planted for a little while. You're at least in one location rather
exactly.
than so nomadic.
Three months here. Yeah, opera is very nomadic. That's a good word.
Well, you're just coming into the prime of your career. I mean, really still. I mean, you know, you're singing like you're a young man with a beautiful, you know, tone to your voice, and Broadway is only across the country. Well, I think it's all possible.
Who's the guy that said it takes 10,000 hours to master something? So I feel like, you know, I've got my 10,000 hours.
And now let's
you know, let it run with it.
Right. You
know?
Yeah. So. Before we forget, let's let people know how they can see Dennis at Sterling's Upstairs at Patello's. This is Sunday, May 22nd. Musical direction by Ed Martell, Dennis McNeil, me, and my big mouth. As always at Sterling's, and this is important, reservations are a must. It is an intimate club, and you don't want to miss out. So the phone number there is 818-754-8700, 818-754-8700. Dinner seating between 5:30 and 6 with a 7 p.m. showtime. This particular event is just VIP seating, and all the details are, you have them at your site as well, right, Dennis?
Yeah, that's www.dennismcneil.com, where you can also listen to me and, you know, the music you play, that's from my CD.
Center Stage.
Yes. Beautiful CD.
It's available
beautiful
there
CD.
Or on iTunes.
Yes. And I got a free one today.
You did?
Yeah.
You're
and he gave me a CD,
man.
Too.
Lady, oh. Hello, lady. Before
there's
we...
that sound effect.
Hey.
Good Lord.
Sorry, I don't know
it
why.
It never stops here
you.
At State
I'm
of the Arts, you. Does it? Mm. You know what, Dennis, I want to just ask you something real quickly before we go to the next little initiation that we have to do with you as our guest. We didn't do that with Lena, by the way.
No, but I figured that, you know, it's weird to break it up because I wanted to make sure that we touched on the chalks and
yeah,
the other things.
That, which was
we'll
a,
have her back.
A good idea. Absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned about, you know, being an opera singer, training, like, for the Olympics, et cetera. But in your bio here, I'm actually reading something about the Olympics that you did.
Oh, that's true.
And a pretty phenomenal assignment was it, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Right out of college, I the Olympics were coming to L.A., and I wanted, come hell or high water, I wanted to work on that. I thought, how exciting. It was this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Olympics, yeah.
They were spectacular. And so I just started a letter-writing campaign that finally ended up landing me a job. And I ended up being the production supervisor of all the rehearsals for opening and closing ceremonies. Leading up to that, I put together the 1,000-voice Olympic Honor Chorus. I ran the casting for 300 break dancers that were in the closing ceremonies with Lionel Richie. I worked with Ron Field, these Tony Award-winning choreographers, and Oscar, Ron Field, Joe Layton, Dee Dee Wood, who did
Joe was an old
music.
Client of mine.
Wonderful people, every single one of them. Great experience.
There was like 4,300 people involved in that.
And
right?
Had you had any experience doing anything like that, or did you just sort of really pitch yourself so convincingly that you just?
Me and my big mouth.
Well, there you go. It comes full circle.
Yeah, I just talked my way into the thing, and that's what we did. It was a great experience.
Oh, wow.
L.A. will never be like it was for the 2 weeks during the Olympics.
Well, I remember
it
that
phenomenal.
Vividly. It was phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, that was 82?
84.
Yeah, I wasn't born
Olympics.
Yet, so it was...
Oh, really?
You'll have to tell me about that.
Is that what they're calling it?
Yes.
Okay. You know what? Before we get into Dennis's story that we want to hear, is it one of his... most fond memories back in the theater that maybe went a little awry. I just want to remind people about Gypsy one more time, ladies and gentlemen, and it's on stage at the Arena Stage in Hollywood, and tickets are available at westcoastensemble.org or simply call 323-655-0108. And to see Mr. Dennis McNeil at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's, Paul, that number is?
That number is 818-754-8700, or check out Dennis's website, Dennis McNeil. McNeil has one L at the end of it, mcneil.com. And also, we're going to have Dennis play us off the air with a little track called They Say It's Wonderful end of our hour.
Yeah, first, we're going to hear his story.
First, we want to hear, Dennis, the worst thing, a most unusual, most embarrassing performance story that you have for us. We've got about 3 minutes.
Well, I think of three of them. One is when we were at Ford's Theater with Sammy Kahn, and the lighting computer went out, and we had to do the entire show with a follow spot. So Sammy walks out on stage, dark stage, follow spot catches him and follows him, and he does his little introduction and explains the situation and says, we're going to have to do this in just a follow spot. And ladies and gentlemen, let me explain what a follow spot is. And he turns and he walks from one end of the stage to the other and back with a follow spot following him. And he says, ladies and gentlemen, that is a follow spot.
He was, what? How old was he then?
76.
I was going to say.
Yeah. It was just a spry 76, but he had some health issues. Yeah. And, you know, God love him. What a great experience to be with him.
We saw him in Chicago, the Halsted Performing Arts Center, before it became a Petco.
Words and music. The other one that kind of fits the theme of today's show really well is I was in Ireland, in Clifton, Ireland, and I was in a bar just with friends, but I was asked to sing a song. And I got up and I sang a song with these three guys that were the band. And as I'm singing this poignant Irish song, these two hen parties walked in. And hen party in Ireland is like a bachelorette party in the States. And they're dressed to the nines, all this stuff, and they've all been drinking. And this one woman is in the front row, and I'm getting more and more, you know, emotional in the song and into it. In the room, you could hear a pin drop. In the first row, I'm the only guy who can see this because I'm the one looking out. Is a girl holding a beer, and she's got a straw in the bottle, and the straw is shaped like something you might get if you're on a bachelorette party.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Point made.
And she's going down on it and drinking her beer. Each time I'm singing high notes and getting all emotional. Nobody else can see this but me.
That was a little gift for you.
It was special for me.
Damn it. Some guys get so lucky.
I tell you. I hope it wasn't a statement.
It was a lucky straw.
I do want to fit this track in. So we want to, I don't mean to cut you short, Dennis, but I want people to hear you sing as well. And I want to be sure we can tuck that in.
That's another track off of Center Stage. Right.
Yes.
What is it? This is They Say It's Wonderful?
They Say It's Wonderful from Annie Gets Your Gun. John Raitt sang it at my wedding.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
so we'll hear that in a moment. But next week, who do we have, Michael? We have Doug Kayback. Doug Kayback, director of the Classic Farce Flea and Arrear at Edgemar Center for the Arts, coming up in June.
He's also the theater department head out at Cal State University.
One of the professors out there.
Yes. One of the great professors out
there. And we look forward to having him. Dennis, thank you so much for being
thank you,
on
Dennis.
With us
Absolutely.
Here in studio.
See you on stage at Sterling's on Sunday.
I'm looking forward to that, and I hope you, all of you radio people out there in LA Radio Talk. .com or talkradio.com.
LATalkradio.com.
Yeah,
indeed.
We'll come.
Indeed. So let's give a little listen to They Say It's Wonderful. We will see you all next week.
Thank you.
They say that falling in love is wonderful. It's wonderful. So they say. And with the moon up above, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So they tell me. I can't recall who said it. I know I never read it. I only know they tell me that love is grand.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.